What's up, Josh?
Hey, what's up, Jake?
I'm just checking in, making sure you got back all right.
Yeah, I did. For everyone out there, I got to meet my pen pal in person this weekend.
Yeah, we've known each other for a few years now, but first time we met in real life.
First time we met in real life, I flew out to Lanai and Little Island and got to hang with Jake and Sam and do some jujitsu, eat some good food, enjoy the Hawaiian weather and the
Got to see
ocean.
the Buddhist temple.
Got to
Yeah,
see the famous Buddhist temple where they train at, which is pretty cool. That you actually, first thing I noticed was like you had a lot more mat space than I expected.
it's actually pretty nice. Yeah, this guy who we trained with was, nice enough to buy a bunch of mats, and we just kind of threw them down. And yeah, surprisingly, it fits perfect. There's like poles that come down where if I think if we hit one of those poles, the whole building would fall down. But yeah, so far we've managed to work around it, and it's great. Yeah, it's a great little training facility.
Yeah, super fun. I had come from another island on a hunting trip, and then I remember we were planning the day and I flew out to Lanai like Sunday evening and you were like, "You want to train today?" And I was like, "Yes, for sure." And
Yeah,
basically had a
just had to
private lesson.
get you a shower before.
Yeah, that's right. I
Just
had
had
to
to get you a
shower.
shower before. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to shower before, brush my teeth, put on the deodorant.
Yeah. You were river bathing for a few days before that.
I smelled like, yeah, I texted Jake beforehand. I was like, "Hey, I'm already breaking the stinky rule." 'Cause when we were planning, like, how long should I stay? They were like, "There's a stinky rule. After like 4 days, you start to stink or something like that." I was like, "Shoot, I'm already coming in stinky." But yeah.
Yeah, we got to train that night. Yeah.
We got to train that light.
Went
Train the
over
next
some
day.
straight ankle lock stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about straight. I didn't know anything about leg locks or straight ankle locks. I mean, we talked about Ashigurumi and like the entries, but I never ever went for any kind of the finishes in those positions. So Jake gave me some details on the straight ankle lock, which was really fascinating. Because I had always seen online everything on the straight ankle lock looks like, you have their leg in your armpit, and then you use like your forearm blade of that bone and kind of pull it up like a guillotine almost, and then expand your chest posture to like put pressure on the Achilles. But then Jake showed me this little half slipping the heel out a little bit and really like rolling that ankle. So actually, Jake, can you explain a little bit like all the different shout, like the different pieces of how you put together your straight ankle lock that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I just like anything, like I studied a bunch of people for it. Mikey was a big one. Mateus Shishinsky is probably the biggest one. Gordon, I studied his recent leg lock instructional as well. But yeah, it's just kind of like I was explaining to Josh, there's like 17 different ways to do it, and it's hard to like teach it, I think, because you're just trying to like teach the idea, and then you can kind of like play with different grips and different ways of expanding your chest and like different areas of your body to try and like ideally put the inside of their foot. Like if I put it on like these ribs before expanding my chest, it's like significantly tighter, and just like messing with little details from each and just trying to find the version that you think is best. But yeah, like even just like connecting your hands for a straight ankle, like there's like six different ways to do it, and yeah, it's just like a lot of preference involved. But yeah, we just kind of went over the straight ankle, and yeah, hopefully that'll help.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool one. And it was also cool because like it's so different when you get to learn it from someone who studied so much. Like what I realized, like when you were showing me all the different ways to do it instead of like here's one way. But like you were like, try this grip. Or some people like to slip the heel out a little bit, by grabbing the shin. And I got to feel it. And then I remember we were doing it back and forth a little, and you were like, "Ah, that one's not really there." And all of a sudden, there was one technique where it was like, "Oh, you were like, yeah, I felt that one. Yep, that that's another one. Yep, that's tight. And then it got me comfortable. I don't know if it has to do with your body style or like something just clicking right, but it was neat to be like taught in a way where it's not like, this is the one way, but more like, hey, let's play around with it. And then you find the way that works for you. And that was cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you could definitely tell, like, at the beginning, you were putting a lot of strength behind it, even though I wasn't like resisting at all. You were like using a lot of effort to get me to like tap just out of like discomfort. Yeah. Whereas when you got it down after doing it a few times, I was like on the verge of tapping before you even started utilizing your strength, like just getting my foot in the correct position and just kind of taking all the air out of that hole and just kind of compressing my foot just really mm-hmm. tightens it up for sure.
Yeah. And when Jake also, you said you illustrated it, it's like you're trying to roll their ankle. Like when someone twists their ankle and they fall, it's like from basketball or something. And when you said that visual, that really helped. And then when I started getting it right with the suction all out and then just rolling a little bit, you tapped way earlier than I had expected, because before I was putting a lot of pressure on it. So it goes to show, like, when a technique is done well, you don't really need a lot of force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've said it probably before on this podcast, but my instructor always said that if you have to use more than 40% of your strength to get a submission to work, then one, it's probably not going to work in competition because they're not going to tap when you do it. And two, you should probably just readjust because you don't want to hurt anyone in the training room, right? And that's when people get hurt, when you're ripping on something at 80% of your max strength and then something pops. So
yeah,
for the safety of everyone and the efficiency of your techniques, 40% is usually as far as I go when I'm applying a submission.
Such a good piece of advice. It's such a good one that white belts need to hear.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we will just go until we get the tap and it's like, oh, we got the tap. But it's like, that person's just like, man, that was just really cranky. And I'd rather just tap to that versus it was an actual submission. Right. So, yeah.
False positives.
False positives.
Minimize the false positives. Yeah.
Right. For those who don't know what that is, could you explain?
What's a good way? Mark, do you want to explain it?
I'll try. So false positive is where you do an action that gets you the result, but it's the wrong action. So an example could be, I think this happens to me when I try to darce people. Sometimes I'm darcing people, but I don't close enough space to actually be a choke, and I'm just cranking their neck, you know, and they tap from the crank. And so then it gives me the false positive of like, oh, cool, that technique worked. Like the way I did it is the right way, when really that was a crank and it's not the right way. Or another, I guess, example is if I'm trying to do the straight ankle lock and I'm just calf slicing you with my forearm instead of actually rolling the ankle, and you tap from the calf slicer just because it's uncomfortable, then I'm like, oh, cool, that's how to do it. When really I should ask you like, hey, was that more of like a slicer? Or did it really have the breaking pressure to get the true feedback? So I guess a false positive is like an illusion that you're doing something right when you're doing something wrong. Another example could be right. If you just use strength and just bench press someone off that's really light and you escape side control and you're like, oh, sick. That's how you escape side control. I could just bench press them off. And then that's another false positive. It's not how to do it, but it worked because right. The guy's really light. So,
yeah. Like Craig Jones always talked about how when he was initially learning heel hooks, that as soon as he would just catch someone's heel, they would tap in training. And he thought he knew how to do a heel hook. And then he went to a competition and he caught someone's heel and they didn't tap. And they like actually tried to get out. And he couldn't finish the submission. So then he basically said he started to do basically a different kind of like the 40% thing. But basically he said like you just hold the person for like 3 seconds. And if you can hold the person for 3 seconds, then your control is solid. And then basically they have to freeze and you have to like apply a little pressure slowly. And if they tap from that like minimal pressure, then you had like a proper submission. But if you hold them for 3 seconds and they freeze and then you have to like yank for, you know, 80% of your strength, then to get them to tap, you probably didn't have the submission. And in a tournament, they probably wouldn't tap.
That is such good advice from you now. Because now that I have some understanding of that finishing details and I have this desire to practice it, but I also have a fear of practicing it because it's like, I'm going to go in practicing a leg lock. Like now I have to be the guy who understands what's happening. So I think my goal when I'm sparring is and trying to practice that technique should not be, oh, I'm going to try to tap people out with a straight ankle. I think a good goal would be, let me try to hold them in this straight ankle position for a few seconds, see if they escape, see if I can adjust and hold, and then maybe later work on the finishing mechanics for now, just for safety reasons.
Right. And when you get it right, I think you could tell, like, when you got a good bite on my foot, like I was ready to tap kind of without you even putting any pressure. And a few times when I've done this, like when you get it good, they just kind of like look at you like, oh shoot, kind of thing. And that's when you kind of know, like, okay, if I wanted to, I could break this foot right now, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to you just kind of like ripping on their Achilles and they tap because it's a Tuesday and they don't want to be that uncomfortable and you're like ripping on it with 80% of your strength kind of thing. So definitely don't do that in training.
Yeah. A few good nuggets in there already. I did want to talk a little bit and reflect a little bit about the class, because I got to go to one of your classes, which was super cool. So the next day went to one of your classes and got to do is that the way you structure all your classes? The one that we did?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And so we basically start by, I guess for me, it felt like we start by you first giving an explanation of a high level principle. And what we were working on was kazushi, off balances to the hands or to the hips. And then you gave a few examples of what that might look like from open guard or what you might do to take them, push them to your hands or your hips. And then we played designated winner, which we all paired up. And for those who haven't heard of it, I think this is from Josh McKinney, the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Did he make this up? Hey, one quick note before we jump in. You know, on the show, we always talk about how we should train with intention and we should show up to class with a goal in mind of something that we're working on. But one challenge with that is that we don't really have a lot of control over what's being taught when you walk into class. So for example, last week I could go to a class and they could be teaching details to finish an armbar or how to do a Kimura. But we're all at different stages in our journey. And for me as a beginner, I know right now I should be prioritizing defense. So like pin escapes, guard retention. And so that's why we're really excited to announce that we actually landed our dream sponsor for this podcast, and it's SubMeta. If you haven't heard of SubMeta, it's a learning platform for jiu-jitsu, and I've actually been using it for a couple months now, and I really like how easy it is to use. It's organized, and it's structured in a way to help us build a well-rounded game and start to take our learning into our own hands. So there's dozens of courses on there. They're organized by skill level, or you can deep dive into specific topics like back takes, leg locks, open guard for gi, for no gi. Right now, I'm partway through the foundations course, and I really like how there's bite-sized videos. They're like 5 minutes, 10 minutes long with little quizzes in between them to help me reinforce my learning. The platform is only $25 a month. And when you use the code BJJHELP, you get $16 off your first month. So it only costs you $9 if you want to try it out for a month. So that's SubMeta, SubMeta.io. And the code is BJJHELP to get $16 off your first month. Go and check it out. The link is in the description and let us know how it goes.
He didn't make it up. He always says he didn't make it up. He just made up the term designated winner. And that's kind of like what I know it as. Mm-hmm. So he tends to get the credit, but he didn't make it up or anything. Yeah.
Gotcha. Shout out to him for naming it and popularizing it perhaps. So how it worked is, and I really like this exercise, and I remember we reflected on after class, but yeah, Jake basically just said, all right, everyone here, like pair up, and then one person on bottom, one person on top. The person on bottom's goal is to get the top person down to their butt or onto their hands, or like down to their hip or hands. And that was a great way to simplify what an off balance or the beginning of a sweep looks like, because they're either going to go back or on their hip or on their hands. And then you just gave us a couple ways to do it, but then really just let us play with it. And the analogy that I like to use. Oh yeah, and it's designated winner because the person on bottom is supposed to win every time, and the person on top can kind of like start to vary the different looks or maybe give more resistance over time, but still let the person on bottom, quote unquote, win the game. Yeah, and I remember after class reflecting on it and thinking that it was very similar to like when you go to the weight room and you're lifting weights, there's that term of time under tension. It's like, how much time is your muscle actually being worked under tension in these movements? And I felt like that designated winner game really sets you up in jiu-jitsu to give you a lot of time under tension in a very specific position and like explore the intricacies of the position in real time. I did a lot of talking there for a first timer in your class, but what do you think?
I think that was an awesome explanation. I think that gym example is perfect. And just to give you and the listeners an idea of where I'm coming from, basically like Danaher and all those guys, they talk about how from open guard or just guard in general, you tend to attack the upper body. And then when someone defends the upper body, you attack their legs. And then when they defend the legs, you advance your position. So kind of the end goal is that positional advancement. And a lot of the people in the class that I'm teaching don't really know very many leg locks. And to be honest, don't really know many upper body submissions as well. So positional advancement, I think, tends to come easier. Like it makes more sense just naturally, like, oh, I'm on bottom and then I want to get on top. So basically the way I'm going to try and structure the next few months is kind of reverse engineering that process and teaching people how to get on top if they want to get on top. And then potentially going backwards and going like leg locks and then upper body submissions. And the second reason I really want to emphasize getting on top is that in my ADCC analysis, like just in ADCC in general, everyone emphasizes wrestling so much. And it seems like there's not really an advantage for initiating a takedown versus defending a takedown. And it's really coming down to like who wins the like mat wrestling and like scrambly situations. And to be honest, like I think like everyone emphasizes wrestling so that you can get on top if you want to get on top. But there are other ways to get on top if you want to get on top. And basically what we're practicing by putting them down to their butt or their hands are ways to give you like a head start in that wrestling exchange when you do want to get on top. And it seems like a lot of people are doing that in ADCC, which is why I thought it was a good thing to practice and develop.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I think we teased it a little bit in our last check-in talking about submission data, but Jake is going through each weight class for ADCC trials matches. Is that right? Trials?
Yeah. And the actual ADCC event. Yeah.
And the ADCC event. And he's looking at all the matches, or not all maybe, but a ton of matches that ended with a submission. And I think for example, the minus 66 kilo division, Jake analyzed 185 matches that ended with a submission and found that, can you share some of your findings from that?
Yeah, well, I think the findings that relate to our conversation now are that the people who pull guard, they had a quick leg lock in the beginning. And if that leg lock didn't work, they were able to get on top, either wrestling up or sweeping the person or going directly to the back. So basically that's the game plan from bottom position is leg lock them quickly. And when they run from your leg lock, you wrestle up and you take their back. So that's kind of what we did with you. Like that first session, it was like how to do a straight ankle lock. And then the second session is like how to get on top when they run from your straight ankle lock pretty much. So yeah, that seems to be the game plan from the bottom player's perspective that I've found in my data.
Yeah, it was super cool to see
at least from
graphs.
The lower divisions. Yeah,
right. At least in minus 66, yeah. And then you're working right on 77 right now, and then we'll continue moving up, and then you'll have this whole like the entire ADCC across all divisions. It's gonna be really, really cool to watch come out. It was crazy to see the graphs of like submissions that happened under 3 minutes. It was like basically almost all leg locks, right? Or like a huge percentage of leg locks. Yeah, that was like, if you're going to submit someone fast, it looked like that was what happened the most in ADCC. And then
it was
after
leg locks and guillotines.
Oh,
like guillotines happened quick a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
I think there was like six guillotines and they all happened before the 3 minute mark.
Do you remember how many leg locks there were?
Oh, there was a lot. I don't remember the exact number. Before the 3 minute mark, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was like a significant drop off, but like at 3 minutes, it was just like way less successful heel hooks at that point.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, so the game plan 0 to 3 minute mark is leg locks, or I guess a guillotine. And then after that, it was most submissions happen from the back after 3 minutes, right?
Yeah. Not even close. Yeah.
Super interesting. And so maybe now is a good time for me to make the announcement, not announcement, but just let our people know that I actually signed up for my first jiu-jitsu competition. And I'll be competing on June 24th, Grappling Industries in San Diego. I heard about this match in our interview with Josh Rich, actually, or this competition, because he said he did a Grappling Industry once, no gi, and he got four matches, and that kind of piqued my interest. It was scary to me to like prepare for other comp and like lose your first match, and then you're done, you know, and like, wow, it's like so much work for like one feedback loop. So yeah, that was appealing to me. I ended up looking it up, found one. It's like 2 months out from here. So yeah, so then shit got real all of a sudden. You know, like, oh man, that day is going to come and I'm going to be tested. And so yeah, I was trying to game plan and whatnot. And I think I'll be talking a lot more about competition preparation. I put together like a so-called training camp, had Jake look over it, had my old coach Brad look over it. And we'll be talking about some of that, what that journey is going to be like in the next couple months.
Cool. Yeah. And you moved to San Diego now full time. Yeah. So you'll be settling in.
That's true. Yeah. Another update is 3 weeks ago, moved here. I'm like 10, 12 minutes away from Victory MMA. I live in Ocean Beach. And so I ended up joining Jocko's gym. Got to see him actually a couple weeks ago, which was kind of crazy. He's a lot shorter than I expected, but really big dude. And tons of guys. Everyone's super nice there. There's like a sauna and a cold bath. Like I've been using the gym. So it's a good training center. I just got to find some people now to help me prep for the competition. Maybe after class, hang around and just see what I can make happen. But that's the game plan. I'm going to go in, seated guard, go for the single leg X or X guard and grab a hold of that leg, try to straight ankle right away. If not, wrestle up, pass, chase the back. And nice. Submit from the back. So that's the game plan. I think it'll be fun to like sharpen up some tools during this time.
Yeah. And we'll go over some more specifics next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have sub meta now. So you'll be studying up.
That's right. I do have sub meta now. I love it. I've been working on my bottom side control escapes because gosh, it's the bane of my existence. And the one Lachlan teaches two in there, and the one is like that standard hip escape one and getting the knee in, and I just totally was doing the knees wrong, like getting my legs back in the wrong way. It's super common error. Half of you listening out there probably do this, so you're gonna want to get the course, but link is in the description for a coupon code. But I was starting to use it a lot more, and even against bigger people I was like, okay, I'm starting to feel like this escape, the mechanics a lot better. Plan to keep using that stuff to practice on.
Cool. Right on. Glad to hear. Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation next week.
Yeah, next week we will deep dive into my training plan. Here's some of Jake's feedback, and then I'll go over some of the feedback and like different kind of drills and exercises that my coach actually said it would be good too. And then, yeah, we'll just follow my journey in preparation for the comp. We'll recap the comp. It's going to be good.
Our reputation is on the line.
I go out, lose all four by leg lock. Oh, no. Okay, this is the N of one test. Okay, there's a lot of high variables here. So it's not a reflection of Jake. All right. Oh, actually, I might as well just throw in now, like, for people listening, we've been seeing some reviews come in and ratings, and we super appreciate them. If you've been listening for a while and you actually do like this stuff, would love it if you leave a 5-star review or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Helps us out a ton. We're losing money on this right now, but it's a fun passion project. So if you want to help us out, a rating would be much appreciated.
Sounds good. All right. Later, Josh.
See ya.